Okay.
So hi everyone, and welcome to this session. I hope you believe me when I say that we know more about search than photoshopping. So let's start. And before we start, imagine for a moment that you got responsibility to implement or configure search installation in SharePoint 2013. You might have looked up on TechNet, you might have read blog articles and so on. But now you need to do it for real. You need to know how things work under the surface, what topology you need for your deployment, and also what if you have an existing 2010 installation. And I'm talking both SharePoint 2010 search installation and a fast search for SharePoint 2010 installation. So in this session, Barry Wolbaum and I, we're going to cover all of these questions. And we're going to cover architecture, we're going to cover sizing and scaling, and we're going to cover migration. Together, we have over 20 years of experience with search, and we have been working with FAST since before the Microsoft acquisition, ever since it was just a bunch of binaries. Now the product is starting to be pretty mature. Okay. So we have three main sections, and I covered that briefly. We're going to cover architecture. We're going to talk about the different components, what their roles are, how they interact. Next, we're going to talk about sizing and scaling. We have models for small and medium and large deployments. If you have looked at this for 2010, you might have seen similar models there. The scaling is somewhat different in 2013. For example, we're now sizing everything for VMs instead of for physical nodes, which you might be familiar with for 2010. And last, we're going to talk about migration, and in particular cover what we call a search-first migration. So basically set up your search farm first, and then migrate content over as you see fit. Over to you, Barry.
Thank you, Thomas. And now we're going to go over a lot more about the search architecture. There's one question that we've seen posted on the internal pages as well as asked here is this: what's the difference between fast and not fast in this release? In this release, there is one search core, regardless whether or not you're running the foundation, server, or enterprise. It's all fast. There is a lot of SharePoint stuff in here as well. The old SharePoint, the crawler, is very similar than it was in 2010. So you don't have to do so much work to wire it all together. So that should be good news for most of the people in the room. Okay, so here is the search architecture. These are all the components here. As you can see, all the components in orange except the web front end are inside the search service application, which is a virtual container for all the other components. And you size and you scale all of search within it. So we're going to break up the components into the different sections so we can explain them all in terms of their logical group. The first one where we're going to go through is the feeding chain. This is getting content from SharePoint and other sources into the search index. The actual indexing core, we're going to go into some details on how that works. How it's actually also used as part of queries as well. I know with SharePoint Search 2010 and earlier, you would build the index and you would deploy it to the query component. In this case, you do have a query component still, but you're also using the index as well. So, and we're also going to go in the other section is the query chain, which is, you know, querying the system, as well as the analytics. The analytics component, which is used to impact relevancy and also provides an out-of-the-box recommendations engine in this version of SharePoint. So that's really big news because that's always been a very separate component in the old FAST days. So now we're going to dive a little deeper into the feeding chain. So the feeding chain in this case is made up of two components. The crawler, the SharePoint crawler, and it works almost exactly the same as you knew in 2010 and earlier, as well as the content processing component, which is a brand new component for this release. Okay, so with the crawl component, to go through a bunch of the things with it, there are a bunch of out-of-the-box connectors So it can handle web content file shares, SharePoint 2003, 7, 10, and 2013, the user profiles, Exchange public folders, so not all of the Exchange content. If you're looking to index all of your Exchange content, you could either get a third-party connector or use the search implementation that's in Exchange 2013, which is also using the search engine from FAST. And there are also additional installations you can do for a Lotus Notes and a Documentum connector. Now, if you want to extend to crawl other sources, we do have something known as BCS, the Business Connectivity Services, and Thomas and Matt are going to be going into that in more detail and walk you through a sample of that tomorrow in your session. I think
it's the same time tomorrow. Session called is B311, and we're going to reference that session quite a few times.
Right, and it's all the way on the other end of the conference room, so you might want to start walking just like right after the session. So the nice thing here is that all the information about what's been crawled is stored in the databases. So you have the crawl database, and all the configuration is stored within the admin database. So the crawl modes that we have a full crawl, crawling all the content. That's what we support that for all the sources, as well as an incremental crawl, which is crawl everything since the last time you crawled. But we have a new feature in this release called continuous crawl. And the easiest way to describe continuous crawl is it's there to keep the most recent content changed on your SharePoint site, and this is only for SharePoint. This is the most active content you're working. Someone uploads a document, they want to see it in the search index quicker. So the continuous crawl is there to help with that.
But Barry, the continuous crawl is not really continuous, right? It's still running on a timer. By default, it's set to 15 minutes. And it basically kicks off an incremental crawl every 15 minutes. But unlike incremental crawl, it's not going to wait for the previous one to finish before it starts a new one. So it'll always pick up the last 15 minutes of changes. So let's say that you, for example, have one of the incremental crawls, is a big crawl of some kind, because a lot of content has changed. You'll still get fresh content in from the last incremental crawls. You can set that in PowerShell if you want to fiddle with the timing there.
But generally, you can keep out of the box, you can keep freshness under a half an hour, even with a large crawl. With 2007 or 2010, that was very, very difficult on a large farm. So to move on. Okay, now we're going to talk about the content processing component. The content processing component's primary task is to take the documents that come into it from the crawler, crack open the text, pull the text out, pull all the properties out, do all the mappings to the schema, to the search schema, and we also have an extensibility web service that you can call in there, so you can call additional, either your code or additional third-party classifiers, for example. You have, let's say, a bunch of medical content, and you have a medical classifier that will classify that in two areas. That would be a good place to call the content enrichment web service. The content enrichment web service, just to be important, is an enterprise-only feature. So everything else you see on the screen, except the content extensibility web service and the entity extractors, the dictionary-based entity extractors, are available to they're all available to both standard. I'm sorry. The content extensibility web service and the entity extractors, the dictionaries, are only available to the enterprise version of SharePoint.
And again, Mary, to put in a little word for the session tomorrow, we're going to build a content enrichment web service. So those of you that are interested in the development part should show up tomorrow as well.
They're going to make everything seem really easy. So to move on, we have a conceptual view of the content processing flows that go on within the index. So at the bottom, you'll see that we have basically the idea of the high-level callouts that are done to basically extract the text from the documents, run the entity extractors, and call out the web service. Now, the boxes you see in, I guess that's yellow. Is that yellow? Brown, yellow? Those are extensible. The ones in green are not. Now, one of the big problems you had with 2010 is if you updated all the security with the content, you had to crawl it all again, and it could take a really long time to do a crawl if all the security ACLs are changed within your content. In this release, we have an abbreviated flow that just updates the security descriptors within the index, and it has to do a lot less work in order to accomplish that.
And that should be appreciated, because in large installations, this could take 24 hours or more. Now we are down to much, much, much less for that. It's basically just updating security.
Okay. And Thomas is going to show you a demo.
Okay. Can you switch me over?
I can.
So one of the more common things that you need to do as an admin or developer is to know the difference between crawl properties and manage properties. In SharePoint Search and FastServe for SharePoint, you can set up a number of different sources. Everything that you crawl will go into the full text searchable fields. But if you want to do anything else, you need to set up managed properties. For example, if you want to display it as a part of the search result, or if you want to display it as a refiner, you create a managed property and you set up mappings from crawl to managed properties. So to illustrate this, I'm taking a list in SharePoint, and I'm going to show you how we can take one of the columns here and use it as a navigator in the result screen. So just for simplicity, I have my own SkyDrive Pro, and I have three documents here. And you see I've created one custom field, which is where I have used this presentation before. So if I go in here, just quickly have a peek. Oops. Properties. Then you'll see that I have conference as a custom field. And when the crawler picks this up, it's a crawl property. And to make sure that we actually can set up this mapping in the first place, the first time we make something like this, we have to go in to the search service application. This is in central admin. That's where you set up your crawls. I go into the content sources, and I need to just kick off an incremental crawl so that it picks up new crawl properties. If not, you're not going to be able to set up that mapping. So let's just for a moment say that I kick off an incremental crawl. The next step is that we need to set up the mapping from crawl to managed properties. And we do that in the search schema. And just so you know, the search schema is also available on a site collection and site level. So if you have local admins, or you want your business users to be able to set up these mappings as well, they can do that on that level as well. Okay, so just for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to pick one of the managed properties that exist already, and I'm going to set up a mapping to that managed property. So I go into refinable string 0, which is already set up as a refinable property. You see it. You see there's a bunch of properties on these managed properties. For example, if you want to be able to search directly on that field, if you want it to be displayable, if you want it to be refinable, and so on. Just remember that you don't want to check off all those things always, because all the features you could check off use resources. Okay, so my task is to set up a mapping. So if I scroll down here, I can set up add a mapping. And now it's listing all the crawl properties. And my field was called conference, so I can filter on that. You see there's a lot of stuff in there, so it's almost impossible to find them without search, because it picks from any source you have, and it has preloaded with the most common Microsoft sources. The ones coming from SharePoint are called OWS conference, or get a prefix of OWS, so I'm picking that one. And now we get the mapping from crawl property to manage property. So I'll go ahead and save it. And what's important, why is that not? It's a little slow. But what's important is that the content is not going to populate that field by itself. You have to in some way make that content dirty. So let me, and there are two ways to do it. Either you can touch the content so that it gets dirty and picked up by the crawler the next time, or you can kick off a full crawl. In my installation, I just have a little bit of data. So I don't really care about doing a full crawl. But if you have 100 million in your installation, it might take some time. So it might be easier to write some PowerShell or something that's just touching the content that you need to re-index. No, that took forever. I'll just tell you what the next step is. And that, as I said, is to start a full crawl. And when I've done that, the content comes into the index. Let me see. Content sources.
Of course, it finishes just when you were about to give up on that.
Yes, that's always the case. So full crawl, you can kick off in the same place as the incremental crawl. Kick off full crawl, and it's going to pick up the content. The approximate minimum time a full crawl takes is 2 minutes. So 2 to 3 minutes is approximately the minimum you can expect, even if you have just touched one document, due to the overhead of the different processes going on during a crawl. OK, so now we have the content crawled. I'll just do a very generic search, so I get all the documents back. And then I'll show you how to enable this as a refiner. You see on the left here, I have the default refiners, file type, author, and modified date. And I'm going to put in my own refiner. And those of you that have played with the refiners in 2010, who has seen the XSLT and played with it? Very good. You're gonna really appreciate the refinement control panel we have in 2013. Because now you not only can you do it by checking off boxes, but you also have a full preview. So let me see if I can find that refinable string somewhere. Here we go. So you see, it's actually even showing me a preview of the values. So I know that I'm picking the right one. So I add it, and I give it a label. And I click OK. And that's all it takes to add an extra refiner to my result set. And the process is very, very, very similar if you want to modify your result templates or any other elements of the page. We're going to talk much more about that in the developer session tomorrow, about how you make changes to the front end. Let me see if we got our navigator. You see it down here. Conference, Tech Readiness SPC. By the way, if you're missing the numbers from FastWeb for SharePoint, that's also just a checkbox in the configuration. OK, over to you, Barry.
OK, thank you, Thomas.
Go ahead.
If you want to create a crawled property, how would you do that? You can create one through the UI. You could also create one through PowerShell. So you can create it ahead of time and make sure it's mapped. But for a SharePoint list or something like that, it will automatically define those for you. It sometimes gives you funky names to them. So to try to guess what it's going to be ahead of time isn't really recommended. So sometimes you want to let it do it for you. But you're right. Sometimes you will do it. If you want, we could talk more about that after.
And just one quick correction. Managed properties are what you are configuring. Crawled properties are what's coming in. OK, so when you are indexing SharePoint content, you'll get all the default fields that you have in all the tables. That's all the crawled properties you have available from the start.
No, I was thinking of the content sources actually.
So they are created on the fly. So if you set up a totally new source, it's going to pick up all the metadata about that source and create properties while it finds them, all the metadata.
OK, so now we're going to talk more about the index core itself. This has seen a lot of changes in this release and a bunch of things. It's a native 64-bit architecture. There's the FAST technology that is in there. You're not going to recognize any of the file formats. We've changed all of those. We got rid of FixML. It's not using property stores anymore. So the index has no interactions with the database. So it's doing all the work on the disk. So
and that's a question we get very often, Barry, is where is the query going and where is the index going? And then to just repeat what Barry just said, when you use SharePoint 2010 search, there's a mix of database and disk lookups. Fast Search for SharePoint has only disk lookups. And that's the same in Fast Search for SharePoint 2013. It's using a proprietary disk structure for queries.
Right. And it's also important to note that there's been a lot of optimizations in this release to make this run well in a cloud or virtualized storage and on VMs. We reduced the amount of I/O this needs dramatically and the amount of disk space this needs dramatically. So if you try to virtualize the storage for Fast Search for SharePoint, you probably ran into some performance problems if you had a large deployment. So this core has addressed a lot of those issues. So the next piece that we're going to get into is the index partitioning. So we're following most of the terminologies that were used in SharePoint search in 2010. So where a partition is a logical piece of the index, and a replica is a copy of it. So if I say that I have one replica and one partition, that means that I have what you see here, a single node running a single copy of the index. Now, you have the ability to add additional replicas, and by adding additional replicas, you get both fault tolerance and the ability to handle higher query throughput.
Now, and that's particularly important if you're dealing with web search. I mean, for an intranet scenario, one node is enough, unless you need redundancy.
Right. For the vast majority of deployments, a single partition with two replicas will be what you would need. And Thomas has some architectural diagrams of what we recommend for the small and medium and the large. Now, to add here another partition, we've now doubled the amount of documents that we can index. And it also is good for helping with the index throughput. Now, you can add another one, and you can keep going. Currently, we support up to 10 partitions. We're working on improving that in the near future. So now, how does the fault tolerance work in this model? Let's say your replica goes down. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons it could go down. You're running Windows Update. So what will happen within approximately 5 seconds, one of the other replicas in that partition will take over as master. And you might lose a batch of documents that have been sent to the index to be indexed, but those callbacks will make it back to the crawler, and those will be resubmitted. So from an operations perspective, there's nothing you need to do there to repair that problem. Now, when you bring that machine back up that you ran the Windows Update on or crashed, the master replica will synchronize with the replica that was down. And it uses a journal kind of similar to a SQL transaction log. So, and this will be the end state for that. Let's see. Okay. And Thomas is going to talk about the query chain.
Okay, so the query chain has everything that you need from an end user perspective. You type in the query, process the query, and it comes back again. You have three main parts of it. It's the web front end, which is the same as we're using for all the content editing in SharePoint. We have the query processing, which is very, very similar to the pipeline you see on the content side. It's processing the query strings coming through and the results coming back. And then obviously it's doing the query lookup on the query nodes. The web front end, one big difference between 2010 and 2013 is that we've gone from a server-side development model to a client-side development model. And if you think about it, the main reason is that we want to be cloud-ready. And we want to make sure that all the dangerous code, if you like, is running on the client and not bogging down the servers. So what you'll see in 2013 is that we got a REST API, which means that we have total industry standard interface now to do queries. We also have REST API to the analytics component we're going to talk about later. And then we have a client-side object model that you can use, for example, in the display templates. Again, something we're going to cover in much more detail tomorrow. The server-side object model is still there, but it's not the recommended way of building applications and codes now in 2013. Let's switch over to the query processing. The query processing, as I said, is the same as the document processing stage on the content feeding side. The query string comes through and we're doing analytics on it. We're doing some linguistics and stuff. But the most important part there is that we're also applying the query rules. Query rules is a very, very powerful way of addressing queries where the user is not really looking for the most matching document. One good example is, let's say you're searching for vacation on your intranet. You're not looking for the document with the most occurrences of vacation or the most theoretically matching document. you're looking for information about a topic. And that's what we have the query rules engine to address. It's an enhanced version of the best bets. Another example is you can write marketing deck, and you can set up a rule to identify deck as an action term, and then blend in a block of results with just PowerPoint results. And then the query goes to the indexer. It's doing the queries, and it's processing it up again to the front end. And I think, Barry, you're going to do a little demo to show how this looks under the hood.
Okie doke. So we have a tool that was developed on CodePlex. It's developed by a colleague of ours in Norway. And the goal of this tool is to really help you understand how the REST API works. And this tool is also very useful for the IT pro, because you can now use the REST API in order to see this. A lot of people find this one interesting. I see a bunch of pictures taken of the URL. So if you ask us later, we'll make sure. And you'll also be able to get this presentation on the TechEd website. But the tool really can be used for the IT pro to monitor the system, as well as for the dev to basically build applications on it. So here's the tool in all its glory. As you can see here, we have a URL at the top, and you can paste that URL directly into a web browser. We have a query box. We have a bunch of the options that can be set on the query. You also are able to select all the properties you want to retrieve back, as well as all the refiners you want to retrieve back. So you can completely customize the data that it comes back from the search engine through this. Also, it works with the different search services. So this will work with both an on-premise version of SharePoint or one that is actually running in the cloud. So my demo is actually using our SharePoint Online tenant to show you how this works. So, for example, I can type in here SharePoint and hit run. And as you can see, I have some results back. So I got, in just over about a second, which isn't bad considering how far this is going, I got 700,000 results back from the search engine. So as you can see here, we have the primary results. The tool is just trying to show you all the data that is coming back from the engine. It's not really trying to look pretty or anything.
But when you're starting to play with these result templates, finding the exact name for the managed properties isn't always that easy. So this is a good tool to use to identify what property you want to show and what values they actually have.
Right. And so so the author of this put some examples in here. So you can get started with this really quickly. So he has a properties and a refiner example. So the properties will pull back path, URL, title, and author, and he has some of the syntax for the refiner, so I could run this again. And it'll still take about a second to run. And as you can see here, we have the primary results, but instead of retrieving all that data, the default data, it's only retrieving the information I want with a little bit of additional metadata associated with that. So I can take this string, and I can paste this into Internet Explorer. I had to leave that one up. That was just like the funniest picture. So usually I use a picture of my kid, but Steven Seagal was just a little funnier today. So as you can see here, I was able to run that query through the tool as well as through the web browser. So like I said, this is really, really useful to help getting started with the REST API. In fact, in previous releases, it was much more complicated to use this API, but it's really going to be best practice to use the REST API versus the client-side object model. It's just going to be easier to use from more different locations, especially if you're doing any development in Java or Python.
And one thing you didn't show, Barry, is also that you get different result blocks back. You get a separate block for refiners, and you can set, when you get the query rules going, they will also give you back blocks in different sections. Imagine you can also build applications outside of SharePoint. You can build a .NET application or even in Java if you want, and then utilize the REST API in your SharePoint investment to power that application.
Okay. Oh, wait, this one's me. One second.
Yes.
Go ahead.
They're not gone. They're better.
They're baked different. Into the query rules.
The term is deprecated. So the idea in 2013 is that you have these query rules. So you can write a query rule that simply is very much exactly like what a best bet was. Someone types in one of these words, bring this result for the to the top. Internally, we still use them. You search for holiday schedule, a link for a holiday schedule. If you search for travel, all the links for travel. So those types of best practices are still there. There are some migration issues because we've changed the architecture so dramatically. There might be some manual intervention that you'll need to make in order to migrate, if you used a lot of them, to query rules. But you also might find you don't need all of them, or you can merge a lot of them into a single one because you can do things like regular expressions in there. You have a lot more power in there. But the query rules are a feature in this release that the product group was really, really proud of. We had, I think, 30 sessions applied at the SharePoint conference to want to present on them. So it's really a very, very popular feature. And I know it's in standard and enterprise, and you still get it in the SharePoint online through Office 365. You can still mess with it in there as well. So to move on and to talk about the analytics service. The analytics service is a new component in this release. It's been based on the web analyzer that existed in Fast Search for SharePoint. The idea of this is that it can analyze both the content coming into the system for links, so the link cardinality, so that, equivalent to the PageRank-like technology, to try to figure out what the most important content is, as well as analyzing user events. Now, it's not just analyzing the query events that are in the system, it's analyzing all the usage of SharePoint. So if people are opening a document frequently that's in SharePoint, that's going to impact its relevancy within search. So, here's some examples of some of the things that it can really show you. You get the view count. So when you hover over an item within the SharePoint search UI, you'll see the number of times it's viewed. So some of our popular sites or popular documentation are already at like 10,000, 100,000 plus internally within our tenant.
And not only can you use it to boost relevancy, but you can also use it for sorting. So you can sort by view counts to see what are the most popular items or most viewed items.
Exactly. And we also have a recommendations engine in here. If a lot of people are working in one area and they're also working in another area, well, that other area might be interesting to people who are working in the first area. So this is commonly used for e-commerce. People who bought this may also be interested in these items, but also is useful in terms of sites. If you're working on one site, it will show you the other sites that you might find really useful and interesting.
I mean, think about the research library, for example, as an internal use case. What other people looked at when they were studying this material could also be interesting for you. So that's just one example.
So internally, it's using MapReduce. So the analytics processing component, depending on how many events and how much content you get into the system, will determine how much resources it's being used. You can schedule the analytics processing job through SP Timer. So if you notice that there are problems with it, if you're doing a lot of web crawling content, the number of links in web content tend to be much higher. And you might see a larger growth of your analytics data versus other versus the recommendations you'll see in the rest of the presentation. So one of the great things about this component is that it takes the events from the front end, and basically every so often, every 10 minutes, it will, the analytics job will pick them up, and on a 24-hour basis, that's the default, it will actually process them. So you also get out of this, you get some reporting. It's not super granular reporting that you might expect if you want to know exactly who is clicked on a particular piece of content, but it'll give you the idea of general popularity, since the primary use of this is for enhancing the search experience.
And just like with security updates, the analytics part is also updating the documents or a portion of the documents. A new component in SharePoint 2013 is that we have update groups. So there's one update group for security information, and there's one update group for analytics data.
So, and if you look on the file system, you'll actually see the names of those directories in the index, and the one for security and the one for the analytics. They're tiny compared to the vast majority of the index that contains all the text within the document. So that's another way that we're able to be a lot more cloud-friendly, is because we're not working on such a large amount of data just to update this information.
Okay, so let's switch over to deployment and scaling, Barry.
Okay, Thomas.
Thank you. So when we talk about scaling, we have two main options. We can scale up and we can scale out. Scaling up means that you're throwing more hardware at the problem. The fast search engine has never been really good at that mode. We've always scaled in chunks, so we are doing the scale out option. Traditionally, we have done it with physical hardware. All the models in 2013 are based on VMs. Hyper-V or VMware VMs. Those are two supported
modes. And just to give you an idea, the vast majority of the testing done in this release by the product group in Oslo was on VMs. Prior to this release, they had done much less testing on VMs. So this is the first time that we're really all in supporting this. And I mean, that was clearly a requirement for SharePoint Online and Exchange Online.
But just one word of warning when we are moving to a VM world. Remember that the critical resources need to be spread out. So if you're putting your replica on one partition, you don't put it on the same physical host. That means if you're losing that physical host, you're basically losing your whole index. So if you want to build a system for redundancy, you need to make sure that the critical components, and we'll show you what they are spread out across physical nodes. So here I'm going to talk just very quickly about the difference between running on 2012 and 2008 R2. If you're running on a physical node, any small development environment can easily fit on one node, regardless of 2008 or 2012. But when you're looking at a virtualized environment, in 2008 R2, you can only have four cores, so you need to run two VMs. Even if you're running them on the same physical node, you need to run two VMs to have half-decent performance. In 2012, especially Hyper-V, you can have more cores available for a node, so you can run everything still in one VM. Okay, so let's look at our small. So small is actually a relative term, because it covers pretty much 80 to 90% of all the cases out there. But it will cover it anyway. If you look at this as a kind of a scalable model, we talk about a distributed model where we're running one VM where we take all of the admin components, and we take one VM and we run the indexer and the query processing component. So basically all the components involved in on the query side are isolated on one server, so you have predictable query performance. If you want to add, this model does not have redundancy. So if you want to have redundancy, we basically just add one replica and make sure that runs on a physical, different physical node. I believe running admin nodes now is new in 2013, that you can have full redundancy across all components. And since all configuration is stored in the database, that means as long as you have redundancy on your databases, you also have redundancy on that side. If you want to, you can still run all the components on one VM, a beefed up 2012 VM. But it's not built for scaling as much as the distributed model, which you'll see on the next slide.
And you can ignore the Microsoft confidential internal use only on the bottom. That's actually not true. I'm surprised no one noticed that.
Do we have that on all the slides?
Apparently, we have it on a lot of them.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. There's absolutely nothing confidential about this. anyway, so let's move over to scaling this up. If we start off with a distributed model where we have the indexer component, if we are scaling for 40 million, each scale unit in 2013 is 10 million. So one VM, a four-core VM, can host approximately 10 million. So for 40 million, we'll need four of them. So we move over our indexing and query components, and we add three more. The query loads on an intranet is pretty low. So one query processing component should be enough for an intranet scenario. If you talk about internet-facing applications, it's a different scenario. And then, since you're now scaling up the data, we also want to take out some of the heavy processing units. The analytics processing component can be pretty heavy depending on what type of content you have. But for example, as you're starting to get more and more usage, there's a lot of events coming in. And it's also on the content side, taking out the links and processing those more like a page rank that Google is doing. Since we have an extra node, we can also put in the content processing component. And the most heavy job there is to crack open the documents, so extract the text from Office and PDF documents. If we want to have full redundancy, we're basically adding up an extra row. You'll see that we also have replicas of the admin nodes over there, and we are adding more content processing, mainly for symmetry, because you don't really need that unless you are constrained on the content side. But what's Barry's going to show you what components are using what resources. So as you're starting your performance testing, you can easily see if it's maxing out on CPU or if it's maxing out on disk usage. And then know that all of these components can be scaled out individually. Let me just quickly show you a 100 million setup. It's based on exactly the same principles. We have 10 indexing partitions, and we're just adding up a little bit more processing power on the content processing side and the analytics side.
And if you want to build something this big or larger, please find us at the Ask the Expert session tonight, and we'll go into more details on this. This isn't necessarily a very common use case, but we do have a lot of customers at this size. And you don't want to just go with this without blindly. We definitely want to help you size this out.
Especially since you want to optimize the hardware usage. And as I mentioned, it's a lot of dependent on what type of content and query traffic you have. So you don't want to just throw as much hardware as you can at the problem.
Yep.
Okay, so the next thing is we have a scaling cheat sheet. I'm not going to walk through all of this. You'll be able to get this online as well, so you can take pictures of this if you'd like. But this just gives you kind of a good feel for what the different components are going to consume. As you can see, you know, we have all the six components here, and as you're probably not really surprised, the indexer is the biggest consumer of resources on the system. Okay, and we also have another chart here. We've done a bunch of sizing tests, and unfortunately, TechNet has kind of lagged behind some of our testing here. We're working on improving the release of sizing information with the product. So this was done by our colleague Olaf in Oslo. The big change here is that from 2010, at least compared to Fast Search for SharePoint, is now we're only talking about going with about 300 I/O operations per second for your disk, whereas in Fast Search for SharePoint, we requested approximately 2,000. So we've really done a good job of making this a lot friendlier with virtualized storage.
And that also means that you can actually run pretty well in Azure. Both Barry and I have been involved in testing on Azure, and we got more than decent performance of running SharePoint 2013 and search in Azure for an intranet scenario.
Right. And as you can see, here are some of the sample results from some of the tests that we've done over the last year. Okay, move on. So,
Sorry for killing that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So, what can you do with a cloud? I am a big fan of trying to build search applications on top of a SharePoint Online environment. There is a lot you can do. You don't have some of the extensibility, but there's a ton you can do with the UI. You have access to the REST API. There's a caveat. This is for internal applications only, so everyone who's using that will need to have a login in order to get the power out of that. In terms of deploying SharePoint on Azure, there are some sessions here that are going over it. We recommend that you use it for internet-facing sites if you want to use the content by search and the web content management features of SharePoint. This is a really, really strong place to deploy it. And it's also an excellent place to do development and testing. So it's a really, really good place. And I've had a really good experience working with Azure. It feels like you have the VM admin sitting in your office following your every needs. It really is really awesome. So now we're going to go through some of the components in action. This is a little bit of a canned demo, but it is really, really good to show you what's going on. So what we did is we built out an environment that has each component is running on a different server. So the idea is we're able to basically use Perfmon through a remote desktop application, basically like a firewall, that will show you what's going on during the different types of load tests. So we're going to start by showing you a crawl load test. And this is based on, just crawling SharePoint. And to set the stage correctly, we paused the crawl before we kicked this off. So we started the crawl, had it going, then we paused it. That way, we didn't have to wait that 2 minutes that Thomas was talking about for it to kick off and keep running. So let's see. So the first thing that we're going to do, and I'm going to do this without hands, so it's pretty cool, is we're going to bring up the Search Service Administration page and resume the crawl. And the crawl load involves more components highlighted in orange here. So we're using SQL, the crawl, content processing component, index, and the web front end. And the reason that we're using the web front end is it's also a crawl target for the crawler. So we get the content accessed through there. So as the content picks up, the crawler is now starting to pass on to the content processing. As you see, this implies the increased network traffic that we're also going on here as well. So there you see the spikes in green. The interesting thing is as the content processing is completing the first batches, this is handed over to the indexer. So fairly soon, you're going to see the indexer kick up in terms of usage. But you're going to see some bursts of disk traffic on the indexer in a second when the in-memory indexes are flushed out to disk. The crawler that generates the most sustained disk load in this scenario, if we look at the network load, it is the WFV that receives the highest load. The network traffic here is the sum of the inbound data from SQL and the outbound data sent to the crawler. So as you can see, we're moving the content from the crawl to the content processing component over to the index now. So you can really see through this diagram of exactly the load that's going on the whole system. And this really is useful. So when you're kicking off a crawl, what components are going to be using what resources.
Okay, so next I'm going to show you what happens when we apply a query load scenario. We're going to use Visual Studio. We're going to start with 5 users, and then we're adding an extra 5 users every 15 seconds. So keep a close eye on the indexer and the query processing component and the web front end. Okay, so we're starting up Visual Studio. You see we have start off with 5 users every 15 seconds. We add an extra 5 users. So let's kick off the crawl, or kick off the load test. And then what are you going to see here? On the left side, the red is the CPU, the green is network, and the blue is disk. So you see that the web front end is getting the queries in, and it's starting off pretty low. But you also see that the indexer is now doing the blue one is the disk, because we are reading a lot from the disk. As the caching improves, we're going to do more and more of that work on the CPU side. The query processing component is running that framework where it's processing what's going through. So that's why you see a lot of CPU on the query processing side. So what you also see is from time to time, you'll see bursts of disk activity on the SQL database. The QL is missing an S there. And that's when it's logging events to disk. It's storing them in memory and then just logging to disk every now and then. So you see more and more on the web front end, higher and higher load. I think we get up to about 25 simultaneous users. Let's see. Yeah, so now we're up to 25 users, and you can see the pattern is the same. It's a fairly linear growth in traffic on all the components. All right, so let's switch over to you. No, it's not. It's mine again. Backup. Okay, backup and restore. Backup and restore in 2013 is a fairly robust component. Office 365 is using the same bits as we use for an on-premise deployment, and they are running nightly backups. So this is a very well-tested component, and it's a process you can run without downtime on the query side. You have to stop the feeding for one of the cycles in the process, but you don't have to ever interrupt your query traffic. Barry?
Okay, so backup and restore is a much more powerful thing you can do in this release. You can use the SP farm backup, and you can use that, and you can just back up the search service application. So you can use it to move QA to production, production to QA, as well as use backup and restore for disaster recovery. So you really have a choice of three styles of disaster recovery. You have the idea of hot, so you take a backup of your production environment, you copy it over to a different location, you do a restore, you resume the crawl, and now you have a almost completely up-to-date environment ready to go. The other thing you can possibly do is you can use warm, which is you would take the backup, move it over, you would restore it, but you would basically keep that system paused. So it wouldn't necessarily be crawling traffic until there was a problem, in which case you would resume the crawl, and it would get up to date fairly quickly. Both for hot and warm will require a licensing cost for them, so you know it might not be the optimal for everyone. The concept behind cold is you do the backup, you copy it over to a DR location, and you don't actually restore it. So for that, you won't pay for additional licenses you won't pay for additional licenses, because if your primary goes down, you can bring up a new farm over there. So now we're going to talk about migration. And you basically have four possible paths for migration here. You can do a clean reimplementation, just start from scratch. You can do a search first migration, which is my personal favorite. As well as we support migration from both SharePoint 2010 search and Fast Search for SharePoint.
And Barry, let me just quickly comment on the search first migration. What we see a lot of customers are doing is to set up their new 2013 farm first and then point the proxy in 2010 to 2013 to support site search in 2010, and then point the main search box in 2010 to the 2013 search center. That means that you, for the site search, you still get that functionality in 2010. You don't have to maintain your 2010 index. But for your main search, you get all the power and functionality in 2013. And as you start moving over your content farms, that means it's transparent for your end users if that content is in 2010 or 2013.
Okay, so to go over the migration scenarios, re-implement is you just stand up 2013 and start from scratch. You know, the other possible options are you can do a search first migration. So you still stand up the 2013 farm, but you're only really using it for search. And then what you can do is you can have your SharePoint 2010 environment consuming the search service application from 2013. So, or you can have the box just bring you over to the new site for 2013. So the other thing you can do is you can do a migration. So you would back up the SSA, and you can basically run SharePoint 2013 in a 2010 mode. So for your users, it looks the same, but is actually running on SharePoint 2013. And then later, you can upgrade the user interface to the SharePoint 2013 Search Center. So you can use this to try to do to swap out the Search Center and to see if your users notice. And then you can upgrade them later. So you can do it. You can apply it dark. So the other options are from Fast Search for SharePoint. We do have tools that will do the migration. There are some gaps around the best bets. And you can follow the same mode where you're basically building on a new SharePoint 2013 farm in 2010 mode, and then you can upgrade it later. So the other option is we do have some custom PowerShell tools to export as much as the Fast Search for SharePoint configuration as possible. It's not perfect, but all the flaws are well documented. And you can basically do the same for 2010. Okay. So, you know, the question is, when do you do what? So in real implementation, if you have completely automated the deployment of 2013 and you can just bring the thing up easily, then sure, it makes sense to re-implement. If you're doing either completely out of the box or you're having such highly customized Search Center that you really need to start over, those are reasons to go with that. For search first, and this is, I think, the most popular one. You're actively using SharePoint 2010 or 2007 search, and you just want to have SharePoint 2013, your small search farm dedicated to SharePoint 2013, crawl all your previous versions of SharePoint sources. And you get most of the features of SharePoint 2013 search without actually doing any major migration of your content databases. So the, you know, when to migrate is, you know, you're mostly out of the box. And, you know, the migration is going to be difficult or complex, but, you know, you're still going to push forward with that. You know, if you have a complicated index schema, it might make sense. You don't want to lose all that work there associated with it. So...
Quick recap. We've gone through the search architecture. We've shown you what the different, what the main streams are, and we've shown you what the main components are. We've shown you the scaling, sizing and scaling. You got models for scaling for small, medium, and large that are well tested. And we've shown you the migration paths. So now before, I don't think that's very interesting. That's not interesting.
It's not an Xbox One, sorry.
So when you go to evaluate our session, just remember that the top score in all categories, that's a nice clap on the shoulder to us. Maybe we'll even be invited again. If you have any suggestions for improvements, we're very, very happy to take that verbally after the session, or ask the experts. Thank you so much.